Welcome to the Vintage Podcast, brought to you from the Go Digital event in 2011. If you missed this Vintage London Hub event, here is an opportunity to catch up. Dr. Sarah Louise Quinnell from King's College London talks about her experience using social media to boost her research.
I want to talk about my experiences of using social media within my doctoral research and post-PhD. I'm going to talk about why I used it, really. The applications for researchers and for researcher development that I've become involved with post-PhD. Some of the ethical considerations relating to social media. And, again, relating to kind of the point of this day, it's some thoughts relating to my experience on how HEIs can basically support researchers in using this kind of technology. As Rachel said, I completed my PhD in the Geography Department at King's in 2010, and I was very unique in my department in that I was the first person to use a predominantly online research methodology, which sounds quite exciting, but my interest in digital research I didn't want to be different. I wasn't trying to take the easy way out rather than not go on fieldwork or do other things, you know. But I used things like Facebook, I'd used message boards and forums in my personal life, but hadn't really considered them to be a work tool. However, I was unable to go and do traditional fieldwork. I couldn't go out I was working in sub-Saharan Africa, I couldn't go out and do my fieldwork. One, I had a supervisor who wasn't very keen, and two, I contracted scarlet fever, and so I spent 6 months not being able to actually leave the country. So I had to think of a different way of doing things. So at the same time, I noticed that there are a number of different international organisations like the Food and Agriculture Organisation, the United Nations. They all employ online message boards, forums, to basically bring globally dispersed participants together to have these conferences. It saves them a lot of money, basically, in doing it. But they also said that they talked a lot about how there was the advantages of bringing these people together in a way that became sort of a neutral space. A lot of international political discussions are quite heated. People feel you have power imbalances depending on what organisations or what countries you came from. They said that this actually kind of, it made people all the same. So I began to think about, well, yeah, right, could I use this? Yeah, am I going to contact the right kind of people? So one evening I was using a Yahoo forum, and I started a discussion with someone who was talking quite interesting in biotechnology and GM crops and things. And it turned out he was actually the national representative for Ghana and he developed national policy on biotechnology. Fabulous, this is just the kind of person I want to work with. Turned out he was actually going on secondment to the United Nations Environment Programme. And through meeting him on there, I managed to get to speak to people and had my little in-way into this very closed-off world of sort of international politics. And so I began to sort of think about what I was going to do. So what I had followed was sort of a two-year journey into reviewing a number of different kind of topics and techniques. And I decided in the end that I was going to collaborate with a web developer because not only did I could see what I could use them for, I was beginning to see what I could use technology for, but I wanted to understand how it worked. So along with getting a range of very interesting and slightly non-related to my PhD technical qualifications, I ended up with my own virtual research environment, which kind of used a range of different tools. Some of them were open source, some of them were very bespoke, which were made specifically for me. And if you like, cyberspace became my field site. And I didn't use social media or digital technology exclusively, rather it was the centre of my project and things hung around it or were directed out of it. It was the hub from which I directed my research. It was a good way for me to promote my work. I gained fabulous access to different stakeholders and interested parties that I wouldn't have been able to using traditional methods. I feel it made my work more inclusive. And also it gave me a way to kind of continue communicating with my participants beyond the end of an interview. They could see how my research evolved because I used blogs. I sometimes used, if I was feeling brave, video blogs. And I could keep a journal, I could keep a record of all the work that I was doing. It ran for 2 years due to a range of kind of funding constraints. I was funded by the University of London Central Research Fund and had a small grant from King's College London. And I think it was a really helpful thing for me. Particularly, I had one case study where the organisation wouldn't let me go and visit them, but they would let staff participate in online discussions in their own time. And that was the only way I could have reached these people, because they just didn't want to participate. So there are lots of, I think, pros to using social media in research. You're in control of your own brand from the start. You have to think about yourselves as a research brand. You're going out there as an individual. So you're thinking about the package, really, basically, from the start. I think I found it was more cost effective, and also it enabled my contact with a wide range of globally kind of dispersed participants. And it also improved my response rates. I would never have been able to fly to do all the face-to-face interviews with the 50, 60 people that I interviewed for my research. They were somewhere in America, somewhere in various different parts of Africa. I had people in Europe, I had people in Australia. I wouldn't have been able to do it. However, using Skype and other different types of technology, I could conduct more interviews. The ones where I used webcams and videos, I could record what I was doing so I could trace it back. And using text and kind of instant messaging type programs, I had an instant record of a transcript of what I was doing, so it made my results kind of more accurate. In terms of improved response rates, I think this is really important for PhD students. Lots of them will complain about their questionnaires getting really poor response rates. I did two in my PhD, one postal, one was online. The postal one had a response rate of 20%. The online one had one of 82%. I asked people to feedback and say, and I gave these questionnaires to the same people, asked them to feedback and say, why did you fill in the online one and not the other one? Oh, because we could do it in our own time. It was instant. All we had to do was click, 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 send. It went back to me. You could argue that they can always fill things in their own time, but there's something about seeing it on a screen and clicking some buttons and just pressing send that people feel it was less intrusive and easier for them to interact with. But at the same time as the positives, there are some negatives. It takes time to build a network and establish a presence. Any blogger will tell you that it can take 6 to 8 months for you to get some kind of network and begin to get spotted. So it takes a long time, and you really need to be thinking about it if you're a research student and you're strapped for time really from the beginning. I face a huge lack of institutional support. Yes, I had funding, but my department thought I was mad because I wasn't going out and doing traditional on-the-ground work and spending time with communities. I was removing myself from the community, and I wasn't engaging with them, so I apparently wasn't getting the right kind of data. It took 2 years for them to actually see the importance of what I was doing, until I started presenting results at conferences and then got invited to speak at other things, and they began to understand that, oh, she's got something here. She's actually collecting meaningful data, and had a PhD at the end of it, and I think had very minor corrections. But, oh, okay, right. With that, if you're researching in developing countries, there's a question of managing this digital divide. Okay, I was working in organisations that were operating in sub-Saharan Africa, so you could argue that with the lack of infrastructure, it was a strange technology to use because of lack of functionality and an ability to engage people in developing countries. There are different ways you can handle it, but because I was dealing with organisations who were working in Africa, didn't necessarily mean they were actually based there. Most of them were based in America and in Europe. So I found that there wasn't too many problems, and the UN use a range of technologies, different web crawlers, different ideas that can, even the most limited functionality, they can still operate things. Put your research out there before published, before it's ready, issues of IPR. Wasn't something I initially thought of, but when I was talking on Twitter about giving this talk, a lot of PhD students said, this is the only thing we're worried about. We're really concerned that someone's going to steal our project before we've published on it. There is the argument that no two pieces of research are ever going to be the same. But you have to think about how you are going to present yourself and how much of yourself that you put out there. Partly to do with protecting your work, but also partly to do with protecting yourself. Because another thing I would probably put on here is the inappropriate attention or that you can get from the internet. I was researching biotechnology. That's a controversial subject, and there were a lot of people who came to my website and really didn't like what I was doing and really wanted to tell me about it and tell me why I was wrong and I shouldn't be trying to get developing countries to be engaging with GM crops or terrible. Or other things that I've done, you can get quite a lot of criticism. Some of it can be quite personal, or just very strange people who just want to talk to you for really no apparent reason. So that was sort of my 2-year experience as a PhD student. Now, when I finished my project, obviously I wanted to carry on. I was interested in carrying on my online activities, but I didn't want the research environment and the big site that was going to manage a project. So now I've gone into looking at being involved in different kinds of technology. I have my own blog site, which is used to basically communicate and present my research, present me as a brand, as a researcher. I've done several interviews on blogging and using blogging in research. And it's been quite an interesting tool. It also gives you, particularly I find with academic blogs, you get a type of peer review. I did a post on it, just see it there, my research in plain English to tell people about what I was doing. People started commenting on it. It was amazing how many people had really missed what I was talking about completely. So you begin to think about how you communicate to non-technical specialists, and you begin to review and critique each other's work, and you get kind of more used to that. It also kind of begins to create connections and an audience. Now, this is something that we've been working on as a group since the end of last year. It's the hashtag PhD Chat. It's a community of researchers on Twitter. It's a very diverse community. We come from all over the world, come from all sorts of different backgrounds. We have a weekly discussion on Twitter on a Wednesday night between 7:30 and 8:30 using the hashtag PhD Chat. We'll talk about anything. We're there to support each other, to ask questions, for people to ask questions about their work, to discuss different experiences, different things we've used, different methodologies we've used and why. We have a wiki which acts as a repository for our ideas and our discussions, and the idea is it will give advice to those who come along behind us. We're leaving something behind and for new PhDs. In development, we have sort of postdoc chat, but it's going to need more of these guys to become postdocs for that to actually work particularly well. I'm also the editor of this site, which is PhD to Published. This was founded last year and is designed to give advice on aspects of academic publishing to early career researchers. We work with academic publishing houses and published academics to present a range of different kind of information relating to publishing, because you come out of your PhD, everyone wants you to publish, your examiners tell you to publish, and you come out of your PhD and go, right, I haven't got a clue what I'm doing, how to target journals, what to do, and this is what we're trying to do here. I started editing this site in January, and at the moment it's very much geared towards journal article production, because that's what I'm looking and I want to do. But I'm not saying that I edit it as an expert, I certainly don't, but if someone it's been using as a tool we're using for learning. There is a support and advice site called the Thesis Whisperer, dedicated to supporting PhD students. It's like the Horse Whisperer, but with more pages. It's written by postdocs offering their advice based on first-hand experiences. No topic is too controversial. I wrote a piece called How to Ask Your Supervisor for a Divorce. It got more hits in one day than that site had ever had in a year. We will literally talk about anything. Everywhere you go and everything you do on the internet, you're always going to leave a footprint. This is something researchers have to be very aware of. This is something to do with the idea of lurking and informed consent. If you use public message boards, if you use public forums, is it ethical to use the data and use what people have said on those kind of forums? Or is it okay to just sit there and watch what people are saying and then take it and use it for your research? I think it's a bit dodgy, to be honest, and that's why I built my own site, because so I could actually have people created their own usernames, and so that was giving informed consent. They didn't have to give me their real name, so I anonymised my data. Again, I've talked about the idea of access. Not only is it enabling you to engage with more people, because social media should be about extending your engagement with people, not restricting it. Also, you've got to think about how people access as much of your information and you as a person. Data protection. Everything digitally has to be kept within the in relation to the UK Data Protection Act. So I had offline storage facilities, I had password encrypted files. You have to think about these measures. It's a very new area, and there aren't very many, well, there's starting to get more papers written on what you can do. So how can you support professionals? Well, from my own experience, make yourselves aware of and support the existing resources. Look at what's there, look at what people are doing, contribute to what's already going on. Contribute to our nice little hashtag PhD tag discussion. We love that, to have people talking about it. Engage in students' work. There are loads of students doing things all over the country that are predominantly digital, but they're kind of looked at as being, you know, on the fringe of proper research. The idea of creating these digital doctoral schools. Salford have one, Goldsmiths have one, and they're beginning to integrate their virtual environment with their physical environment of graduate support. And then I would say provide training. I was initially going to say, end this by saying, provide training for PhD students and postdocs who want to use the technology. And then I had a research meeting in my previous department. I'd say provide training to people across the board in terms of faculty, because a lot of them look at you and don't understand it. But once they do understand it, like my department now, they now understand, they now want to put out the funding to build their own research environment within the department. They understand. I think the more training, the more people see how you can use these tools for research, and it's not just some thing for telling people about what you have for breakfast and stalking celebrities, the better things will be.
Thank you for tuning in to this VTIGO Digital Event podcast.